We're back!
This is a journey.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Alan Sandage, a.k.a. Actively Lazy, a.k.a. on Twitter, at Petty Panda. I did change my my Twitter name. I'm sorry for everybody that's looking for at Actively Lazy 85. You can still find me at Petty Panda. Let's see. We are starting, or I am starting, my podcast for the year of 2024 in hopes that we can, you know, get a little bit more content out there for IBN. I know everybody follows the big page and you're probably wondering who's the source behind the big page. If you're not in our actual sports group, I will go ahead and make it easy for you. I do not touch the big page. So if you follow the content, if you comment on it, I, you know, obviously appreciate it. We all appreciate it, but I am not the inspiration behind that. I just typically handle sports. By day, sports director here at ESPN 106.1 FM, and then by night, degenerate gambler. So that's pretty much my life. Anyway, work with me, bear with me. We are going to be getting some of the lumps out because it's the first podcast, you know. I got to kind of see what people like, what people don't like, what's a good time to post it. I'm looking at 7 a.m. on Tuesdays and Fridays. And then, you know, you can listen to it on your commute. You can listen to it at lunch. You can listen to it at night. I don't know, whenever you feel like listening to it. But this will be pre-recorded. So there's opportunities for folks. If you want to get on and do the podcast with me, DM me. I can have you call into the station and we can put you on the podcast. And it's just like you're on the actual radio station, but you're not on the actual radio station. So we could do it that way. And there'll be opportunities for that for folks. I'll put some, you know, info out. If you want to call in, join the podcast, talk about whatever topic is at hand. You know, if we can get a Michigan fan, which I'm sure I can, but we can get a Michigan fan on, if we can get, you know, a Washington Huskies fan on, which I probably will have to try hard for that. You know, we could do that before the big game next week. You know, NFL playoffs is coming up. Everybody's got an opinion on the NFL. We could touch base on that. And then, you know, basketball season comes around, March Madness, et cetera. I'm looking for engagement. That's ultimately what I'm looking for here. And that is my introduction as your host. I'm looking for engagement. So like, comment, DM me, go to my Twitter page and spam me. Just don't spam me on the official ESPN Twitter page. I do not run that by myself. So don't take your complaints there. It says nothing to do with the station. All right, so everybody, if you are into sports, you watched it last night. We all saw it, okay? The Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, two good games, two really good games. And, you know, I'll touch base on the Michigan game first, Michigan-Alabama. There's one thing that I'm noticing from people, whether it be pundits, commentators, folks online. Like, let's be clear. Michigan was not the David in this particular scenario. I think everybody's portraying this as David versus Goliath, or not everybody, but a lot of prominent folks are portraying this as David versus Goliath, and Michigan, you know, finally beat evil old empire Alabama. Yes, they won, and it's great that they won because this is a spot where Michigan typically fails, but Michigan was the better team. They were the better team, not just statistically, but literally they were the better team. We all questioned how Alabama even got in the first place. I still say that, you know, Georgia, if you're the number one team and you losing your conference championship to a top 10 team, it shouldn't drop you out of the top four. I didn't agree with that. And also, me being a Florida State fan, I wanted my team in. But if my team was left out because, you know, Georgia couldn't be taken out of the top four, I would have been okay with that long term. But the Bama thing, you know, obviously doesn't sit well with me, and I'm not going to get too much into that. It's done now. Next year they're going to have 12 teams, so it's not even going to be a issue. It probably won't even come back up, honestly, after this season. But anyway, Bama was there representing the SEC and the number four team, and then number one, Michigan. And the game started out a little sloppy. You could tell there were some nerves on both sides of the ball. You know, there's a lot of buildup throughout the week on, you know, strength versus strength, the Michigan front versus the Bama front on both sides of the ball, defensively and offensively. And, you know, it looked like a stalemate for most of the early portion on the Bama defense and the Michigan offense. But that Michigan defensive line was dominating Alabama's offensive line, especially in the passing game, just dominating. Now, there were some adjustments made second half. I think Bama changed their point of attack a little, started running more in the A and B gaps, not necessarily trying to get to the boundary. A lot of counter and trap action from the guards pulling and stuff. And it was working for the most part. And that's how they started moving the ball. But, you know, you got to be critical of Milroe. He was not good. He was actually a hindrance, if I'm being honest. And, you know, there was all this talk leading up to the game with Link and, you know, Coach O'Brien telling him that he wasn't fit to be quarterback or he should switch positions. And just I get it. As a competitor, you never want to hear that. And you definitely want to use that for fuel. And if you were, you know, an alpha like a Jordan, a Kobe, even LeBron, like these guys who are elite level athletes. I even throw Blake Corum in there because I'm pretty sure somebody along the way told him he was too small because he is kind of short and he might not hold up as a running back. And look at him. He uses that for fuel and he's a beast. He's Mighty Mouse. Milroe, he just doesn't have it, man. He's not even a Jag. And I'm not trying to be critical, but when I look at this team and I replay this game in my head, between the center and the quarterback, it was awful. Like you couldn't do anything if you're the Alabama offense. And I put a lot of it on the quarterback. And then I'll also say, too, that I think that Nick Saban needs to really consider how he's going to run his offenses going forward, because there was a lot of pre-snap things going on that Michigan was doing and a lot of delayed blitzes and stuff that a capable quarterback who can kind of read, you know, the defense pre-snap or who has the control to slide protections and things like that would have been okay for the most part. There's a clip in a picture of the right tackle on one of the delayed blitzes. He's got two guys coming at him, and the line is sliding left. And he's got an inside guy and an outside guy rushing. And I think the outside guy was a corner or safety that came on a delayed blitz. But he's essentially got two people to block, and he doesn't know what to do, and he kind of gets a little too high and he holds his hands out trying to, I guess, you know, jab one or the other. But it was pretty much the entire first half that they just looked confused. I wouldn't say that Michigan necessarily dominated them, you know, strength wise, but scheme wise, absolutely. Michigan's defensive front was on another level. And this is the most discombobulated, couldn't wait to say that word, but this is the most discombobulated I've ever seen Alabama offensive line. It was atrocious. Absolutely unfit to be considered an Alabama offensive line, an SEC offensive line, a Division I top tier program offensive line. I mean, most of my criticism towards Bama is going to go to that offensive line and to the coaching staff because they were not prepared. On the other hand, defensively, the linebackers and safeties and corners, basically anybody covering people, not prepared. Defensively, not prepared. Michigan exploited a lot of their lack of communication with the motion action in pretty much every play. They were running somebody in motion. There were times they were running people in motion, and it was just a throwaway. And I think some of that was just to get a look to see how they would react and then, you know, come back and attack it later. And, you know, credit to Harbaugh. That's something that, you know, he's been known to do at the NFL level. Haven't seen that too much at the college level, I don't think. I don't recall seeing a lot of motion action, but I didn't watch a lot of Michigan games. I'm not gonna lie, didn't watch a lot of Michigan games. So if you are a Michigan truther and you watch every single snap, and I'm wrong, I apologize. However, I will give him credit for being one of the first teams to attack Alabama in that way this year and really make it ugly for them defensively. Like, the guys coming out the backfield were open nonstop. It wasn't just Corum. It was a couple other people. Like, they just – every rotation. They send the guy in motion, tight end or something, and then the little motion that they have behind the quarterback and running back out, just different little looks. And it was always last second, and it was always a linebacker or corner or safety pointing to whoever's supposed to be guarding the guy, like switching off, because there was a lot of man-to-man with Bama, but it just was always too late. So, again, kudos to the Michigan staff. And, you know, after that, like, 10-minute rant, I got to say, hey, Michigan outcoached them. That's what it ultimately came down to. Michigan outcoached them, and Michigan executed. Despite their mistakes, which still, like, stands out to me. Like, Michigan didn't play a clean game, especially with the special teams. Jeez, man, special teams was doing everything they could to throw the game away. But they still overcame that, and that, to me, says that Michigan was definitely the better team. Now we get to the end of the game. I've got the call here for the end of the game, courtesy of our ESPN affiliate. So I will play that for you, and then we'll go into that.
Milroe with Williams in the backfield. Can Bama survive? Milroe running straight ahead. He doesn't get it. He goes nowhere. He's tripped up, and the Michigan Wolverines have done it. They have done it. They have done it. It's all roses finally for Michigan.
And that's Joe Tessitore, who, I mean, he can make anything sound overly exciting, like our guy, who's, and I'm drawing a blank, and I apologize, because I'm in studio and they've got the TV on in front of me and I'm watching the replay as well at the same time I was playing that call, so it distracted me. But anyway, Gus Johnson, Maserati, Marvin, you know, like that. So Joe's got that same thing with him. And, you know, at the end of the day, again, if you are a lifelong Michigan fan, this is your moment. Soak it up. You know, you got over the hump. Obviously, there is one more game left, but the progression of the program under Harbaugh, it's been kind of a roller coaster, and this is something that I think you guys should definitely soak in and celebrate for at least a couple more days, and then, you know, it's back to business. I'm a big proponent of people who've never been there before, like, taking it in, you know, and letting people know, like, you said we couldn't get here, and that includes me. You said we couldn't get here, and we're here now. So obviously you got to finish it, but to the people who said you would never make it to the national championship, those are the ones you need to talk to, because you're obviously here. And then to the ones who said you would never win one, if you do win it, it's their turn to take some too. So soak it in, Michigan fans. And that play call, when I first saw it, I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. And then, you know, everybody kind of broke it down, and Saban gave his take on it. And my friend Chase sent me a clip that showed the guard pulling, which is the action I was talking about the entire second half. They had guards pulling, a lot of counter, a lot of trap. That was more or less a trap action play. And Milroe didn't follow the guy. Like, if Milroe follows the guards, the pulling guard from the right guard pulled, if he's following him through the left side and he runs off his butt, the outside guy who ended up making the tackle was going to run right by him. He's just got to follow his lead blocker, because the outside guy, I don't know if it's corner safety, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but he overran the play a little. And if he stays tight to his guard, he gets in. And this is obviously all hindsight. I thought the play on my second look was an RPO, but the snap was bad, and so Milroe just abandoned it and went for the – just literally tried to power his way in. And then, you know, there's other people who think it was supposed to be an RPO. But then I look at the play, and I'm like, if that's an RPO, I don't know. If he throws the ball to – it's supposed to be a pass to the running back on the left is what I've seen some people say. If that's the case, I don't think that's going to work either. I wouldn't have trusted that. I mean, were they three yards out? But the back is about 2 to 3 yards in the backfield. So now you're essentially 6 yards on a swing pass. You got to depend on your receivers to block. I don't know if I like that play. And honestly, I don't know if I like it being an RPO there. I really think at some point they should have tried to get a slip of play action in and throw it to the tight end or something, like, you know, traditional goal line stuff. But Reese has been hit or miss, and I haven't liked the offensive coordinator at Bama since Sarkisian, honestly. And I think I complained about him a little. But Bill O'Brien definitely wasn't good. And Reese, is again, has some things he needs to work on. But at the end of the day, Michigan won. Congratulations to them, to that program. And it's on to the national championship for them. Switching over to the Sugar Bowl, we had Texas taking on Washington. A game where, let me go back one real quick. I'm sorry. I don't know if anybody caught this, but Kirk Herbstreit has to be the – he's too nice for TV. He's too nice. Somebody needs to talk to him and tell him to lower the dad mode. Like, pull it back, man. Not every kid needs to be hugged. That punt returner, Samaj Morgan, I think is his name, for Michigan, almost cost them the game, especially at the very end of regulation, pretty much. Like, if you're – just don't catch the ball. Don't touch the ball. I'm pretty sure, especially with them being so young, pretty sure they were like, you know what, just don't touch it. I would much rather be pinned on the 1 yard line because it was a good punt than pinned on the 1 yard line because you tried to catch the ball and you almost gave it to Michigan or gave it back to Bama. Like, that was a boneheaded play. That was a boneheaded play. If you're gonna call fair catch, just have your bearings about you. I don't understand how people call fair catch and still get shook. And that to me was, he was shook. It wasn't anything other than the magnitude of the moment, and he botched it. If you're not 100% sure, if there's any ounce of doubt in your mind in that situation, don't touch the ball. I'm pretty sure that's what they told him, and he almost cost them the game. And Kirk goes, and I don't know if anybody remembers this, but it stood out to me. They're talking about it, and he's like, you know, I'm going to take a different stance. You know, we shouldn't really criticize this young man. I see a guy out here just trying to make a play for his team. Man, if you don't get out of here with that nonsense, we are not trying to hear that at the highest level of competition. At the highest level of competition, when mistakes happen, you're held accountable. You're held accountable in that situation, for sure. You're held accountable because there is no next play if that doesn't work. There's no next play. If this was the first quarter or that other time when he fumbled, sure, you hit him on the helmet and tell him, hey, man, you know, we'll get over it. We'll get it next time, et cetera. But when I've only got 20, 30 seconds left, no. I'm not trying to hear that. And, you know, I thought it was funny because Kurt has gone out his way several times, even dating back to when he cried during the COVID season. I don't know. Maybe the game's just getting to him a little too much. He's getting too personal. It's not your son out there or your daughter or whatever, man. They're athletes. They're semi-professional at this point with NIL. We're not calling them names or threatening their families or anything like that, but we do want to hold them accountable for doing silly things, making silly mistakes. That was a silly mistake. It should have been held accountable. But anyway, Daddy Kurt couldn't handle it, so... switching over to the Sugar Bowl, Texas and Washington, and I'll do a segue here, or that was the segue. I got a take from Kirk Herbstreit. I want to play that I thought was pretty good, kind of sums up the game and kind of sums up what I was thinking too. So I'm going to go ahead and play that for you guys as well.
I saw like a 38-35 type of game, and it kind of played out that way. Quinn Ewers and Texas and Sark, they deserve a lot of credit for the season they had and just coming up a little bit short. But to me, it's more about celebrating what Washington was able to accomplish, the year that they've had, doubted and questioned. It wasn't always pretty, but give them credit, man. They got there. They got to the semifinal. They got the win, and now they're headed to Houston for the national title.
And I'm going to be honest with you. It's not enough. it's never enough for college football fans, because no matter what you do, if you don't beat the SEC team, you didn't play anybody. That's what they always say. You didn't play anybody. Well, you didn't beat Georgia. You didn't beat Bama. And that's pretty much the only two SEC teams. But they do that to everybody, everybody. This national championship will not be validated because Georgia didn't get to play in the playoffs. That's what they're going to say. Even though Bama was in there, it's not going to be good enough. So Michigan, Washington, win or lose, no matter what you do, it ain't going to be good enough for the people who apparently run college football, which is the SEC. So that's my rant on that, because I just know they do it every single year. They do it all the time. I don't know why they act like they're the only programs, or they only have two programs that are elite anyway, but it's the only conference that matters apparently. And because, you know, you play Washington, which is a Pac-12 team going into the Big Ten, or because Michigan played a cupcake schedule and the only good team they played was Ohio State, that's what they're going to say. That's what they're going to say. This is how it always goes. But anyway, Texas and Washington was a back-and-forth game, just how I kind of envision it. I said something to a friend prior, or, you know, a couple of my friends who were Texas fans prior, that the one thing about Washington that has stood out to me all year, and I've watched a couple of their games leading up to this one, is that, one, their wide receivers are absolutely incredible. They can do every single route that you want. They're very crisp. They're very precise in their route running. They're very technical in their positioning. They can go up and get one-on-ones. They're not afraid to catch in traffic. They know how to break off a route and adjust. And if you're giving them, you know, combo option routes, the chemistry between Penix and these guys are second to none in college football right now. It's incredible. And I think Texas got a taste of that yesterday. And they probably wish that they could have figured it out a little bit quicker, but I don't know if there is a solution to that, because Penix has been so good under pressure in the system, the way it's set up, and with these guys route running. If you do send pressure, you can't cover them man to man. You just can't. Like, there's no team that can collectively cover them man to man. So it's one of those things where you kind of live and die by the decisions that you make in real time. And just seemed like Texas was a step behind, you know, the entire game defensively. And then you look at the defensive side of Washington. One of the things that I said is that they're not pretty. They are better tacklers than they showed yesterday. At least that's what I thought throughout the year. But they find a way. They find a way. That team in general, when their coach asks them to do something, or when they are challenged, like when he goes for it on fourth down, or if they don't get it on fourth down, like, we'll use both sides of the ball. If he goes for it on fourth, if he's willing to take a risk, like in the Apple Cup, the offense generally comes through. And in the event that the offense doesn't come through, as we saw yesterday, the defense usually backs them up. They are a big light or bright light team. That's what they are. They just play to win games. And that's what won them the game yesterday. There was no fear, no hesitation, no second guessing by Washington yesterday. And that's what ultimately I think led them to the win is you know, even in Penix's throws, man, there was one throw where he threw it in one of those tight windows across the middle on like a little post. And, you know, if he hesitates a split second, if he just looks and is like, I don't know, that's probably an interception or a batted pass. He did not hesitate. It was the little look off to the left and then zipped it, just knowing that his guy was going to be there to catch the ball, not caring, playing with no fear. That is what Washington does best. That is why Washington is in the national championship. Now, is that good enough to beat a Michigan team? I don't know, because just because you're not afraid doesn't mean you can't get your chest caved in. And usually it's the folks who are not afraid that do get their chest caved in. So it could backfire against them. And somebody pointed out that, you know, Michigan knows Penix because he played at Indiana. Yeah, it's true, but this version of Penix ain't the Penix that you saw at Indiana, more so because the bullets he got in his gun now are way better than what he had at Indiana. And I think, you know, he's poised, and I made a joke, well, he's in his sixth year, so he can't possibly be the guy that you saw at Indiana. He's more polished. And I think him and the coach
who used to be on the staff at Indiana. They have great chemistry, so that actually works in their favor too. Penix and the coach know Michigan as well, so you know there's that. If you go hat for hat, Michigan's clearly better, but how much I don't know. I don't know because there are some things that I think Washington does well, especially on that offensive line, that they don't get enough credit for. Now, defensively, I'm pretty sure Michigan's going to push them around a little. You know, that's always a concern. And if they push Bama around some, they're definitely going to push Washington around. But I think Washington linebackers are a little bit better than people want to give them credit for, too. So that might be more of a game-planned type advantage makeup, if you get what I'm saying. Like, Washington's defense is going to really have to sit down and figure something out because they're not going to slow down this run game just off of talent alone. Off talent alone on offense, they could probably still put up about 21 to 28 points. And I tell you, that Michigan defense, if you're putting up about 28, that's a good day for your offense. That's a good day. And again, it just boils down to the fact that the chemistry between the quarterback and the chemistry between the receivers is just so good. And they're so talented across the board, there's got to be a weakness in a collegiate secondary. That's just how it is. Like, the talent, even on Georgia, with 25 five-stars, you're going to find at least one guy that's like, that's the weak one right there. It used to be Ringo, LOL on that. But, yeah, you're going to find that one guy. And Washington has been able to exploit that one guy or that one thing all year. That's why they beat Oregon. They beat Oregon because they had one advantage on Oregon, and that was basically their receivers, and they were able to execute. And one other thing that they do real well as well is that they put themselves in a position where they don't have to overextend ability-wise on both sides of the ball. So if they get in a passing down, they don't try to do anything like different. They just play their defense. They don't play off when they get like third and longs and stuff like that. If they were pressuring you before that, they're going to pressure you on third and long. They don't switch it up. On offense, you know, they stay true to themselves. They try not to get in third and longs. They run the ball, even though they're, you know, people will say that their run game isn't as effective. It moves the chains. A lot of times when they were running the ball last night, it was, what, third and one, third and two, like those short down yards or, you know, putting themselves even at third and two where it was like, I got two chances to run the ball. Like, you don't see them taking too many unnecessary risks. It's very calculated. It's a team that really knows itself. And so I think that's an advantage as well because, again, if you're not as good person for person, man to man, as the other team, knowing your strengths and how to play to those strengths is how you close that gap. And this has got to be a phenomenal coaching job by the Washington Huskies. And then it's also got to be a phenomenal coaching job by the Michigan Wolverines because this team will fight. They're not going to lay down. This isn't going to be, or I would think it wouldn't be a blowout. And if it is a blowout, then I'm pretty sure Washington's still going to give it their all. So I'm looking forward to that game. I thought takeaway-wise for the Texas-Washington game, like, ESPN's got to quit this Arch thing. Like, we get it, okay? I want to see Archie play too. But Quinn Ewers is not a bad quarterback. Like, you got people calling for Archie or hinting that Archie needs to play when the starting quarterback was 24 for 43 with 318 yards and a touchdown. Like, what? What more do you want? They scored 31 points. Quinn Ewers has 22 touchdowns and 6 interceptions on the year. And I don't understand. Like, people are calling or they were hinting to calling for him or calling for the backup like he was playing bad or something. It's kind of silly. Now, I will say his percentage on the year, completion percentage on the year, was significantly lower. I think he was around mid-60s, upper-60s for completion percentage. The Oklahoma State game in the conference championship for them, he was 76.1 completion percentage. This game, it was 55.8. And, you know, again, shout-out to Washington. and their defense, their defensive approach. I think Quinn has some tendencies where he's too dependent on timing. He's too dependent on the script. And when he's off of that, it kind of takes him a little bit of time to get reacclimated to the game or to find his rhythm. And, you know, Washington kind of exploited that. And so I don't know what Texas does going forward. Quinn is coming back, so they say. Quinn is coming back. And I would assume Archie wants to play and expects to play. So we'll see how that plays out. Texas from here, just continue to build with the momentum, man. And we as college football fans, we troll one another when we lose. But in the grand scheme of things, if you're looking at it from a business standpoint, like Texas is virtually back. You know, they've progressively gotten better. They went on the road this year and beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Regardless if this was the best Bama team or not, it doesn't matter. They went into SEC country and they beat one of the premier SEC programs. And then they fought their way into the Sugar Bowl, into the college football semifinals, which, again, this is all progress. They won the Big 12 championship on their way out. They will be in the SEC next year. And I know people are like, you ain't going to fly in the SEC. The SEC is not as good as everybody thinks. Now, Ole Miss has definitely got something cooking over there. And I expect that Auburn will be back in about 2 years or so, because Hugh Freeze is recruiting pretty well. But Sarkisian has shown that he can navigate that kind of hostility, and that he's a good enough coaching mind to make adjustments and to be able to go shot for shot with some of these programs. And I think he's got a good thing going in Texas, and I hope they keep it going. Not sure what it's going to look like with Arch. Obviously high expectations because of his last name. And I would anticipate that with his uncles and just the family pedigree and the weapons that he'll end up having at Texas, he should still be good. And I look forward to seeing him play. And I think that, you know, Quinn should, I really felt like he should have hit the portal anyway. Because there's no way he's gonna outplay Arch and be the starting quarterback next year. And if he does outplay Arch, there's still no way that he's gonna be the starting quarterback. So it's totally up to him. Obviously, it's his decision. He probably could go back to Ohio State if he wanted to, but that's a topic for another day. So that is your college football recap of the playoffs. Looking forward to the national championship. Gonna actually sit down and look at both teams a little bit closer. So on Friday when I come back, I have a little bit more analysis on what I think will happen or what should happen, how teams should attack, how teams should defend, and things like that. I am looking to get more into the X's and O's and terminology in college football and NFL. I do hate that, you know, it seems like they're two different languages. It's like the Mexican version of or the Mexican version. Wow. The North American, South American version of Spanish, and then the European version of Spanish is essentially what it's like sometimes. It's the same thing, but it's not, you know, and I'm trying to learn it. So bear with me as I go through that process. If anybody's listening and they know somebody that can help me with that, by all means, hit me up, man. I'm looking to learn. I love to watch film and I love to talk football. And so if you know more than I do, help me out. Switching to the NFL, because there are a couple takeaways from the NFL, and I'll run through those real quick. Obviously, the weekend takeaway, the Eagles loss, I think, overshadows the Lions controversy. What is going on in Philly? What is going on in Philly? Who knows what's going on in Philly? I don't even think Philly knows what's going on in Philly. But they got to get it together. They got to get it together. I am one of the folks who stand by this. Losing in December is bad. No matter how you spin it, losing in December is bad. If you've got four games in December, you need to win at least three if you're a playoff-bound team. If you don't, it is bad. Because no matter what you do, especially if you're losing within the last 2 weeks, that's going to linger in your mind. when you go into the playoffs. And the one thing you can't do in the playoffs is have regular season thoughts. you got to hit that thing with a fresh mind. And I think Philly's just all out of sorts. We kind of saw this with Doug Peterson too, man. Like, he won the Super Bowl. In this case, Sirianni got to the Super Bowl, but the staff left. And, you know, my friend RC says it a lot, and I kind of downplayed it over the years, but I think he's got a point. You know, you lose your staff. There's a lot going on the NFL sideline. There's a lot of things that you delegate out, and there's a lot of personalities that are so unique that you can't replace it by just going to the next man up. And I wasn't a big fan of Gannon, but the defense looked a whole lot better last year than it does this year. People were healthier too, and that matters as well. But schematically, they seemed like they had a better understanding last year than they do this year, and I was critical of last year. Offensively, I already knew Shane Steichen was going to be missed. And I said something about that the third game of the season. They took a lot of the RPO out, and it just – like they just – didn't have that deep threat explosion to their offense, which was a huge reason why they were successful last year. I looked up the percentages a while ago, but they're almost like 30% less productive on deep or big plays, explosive plays this year. And that's a huge problem for that offense. So, you know, you end up losing to teams like the Cardinals at home, man, that's tough. I'm not even going to get into the fact that they were like a 12-point favorite or something like that. It's just the fact that you lost. Like, you're going to have bad games. And especially when you are a playoff-bound team and it's the end of the season. Another thing that my good friend RC says is that, you know, these teams get desperate. But I don't think the Cardinals played desperate. I think they just beat them outright. I didn't see any desperation, any trickery, any like, unconventional type play calls. I just saw a team that came in and was like, we're going to beat you because we're better than you. And I don't think the Eagles were ready for that. So it's a shame, man. But the Cowboys find themselves in a position to go to the 2 seed. And I think that's huge for them because they are undefeated at home. And the idea that they would potentially be a 5th seed and have to play on the road, even if they had to play somebody like the winner of the NFC South, I don't know if they can beat the winner of the NFC South on the road. They have not looked good on the road, and it's been a significant difference between home and away. I can't tell you why. I'm going to the game Sunday between the Commanders and Cowboys, and I'm hoping to get locker room access. I was told I could, so maybe I'll ask somebody if they know why. Maybe I'll ask Dak, you know, not trying to be a jerk, but seriously, like, it's got to be in the back of your mind. You're human. You know the splits, man. You're living it, you know. You're the one that's losing on the road, and then you come home, and you're like on rookie mode in Madden. So you got to know. So it's got to be something there that, you know, they're just not willing to talk about. And then, again, the Lions controversy, you know, now that I saw or the report came out that they called the tripping call on the wrong team. If you take that into account, then everything else after that is it's a non-issue, because you don't get the did he declare or not stuff, and then you don't get the Micah, what is it, offsides, and you don't get the questionable call to go for it again. But I stand by. I think that was the right call. I don't want extra football at the end of the season. Even if it costs me the 2 seed, because I'm still in my mind, if I'm Dan Campbell, I was gonna say Matt Campbell. If I'm Dan Campbell, and I know he didn't give it this much thought, but if I'm Dan Campbell, I don't care whether it's one home game or it's two home games. Just give me a home game. At worst, I'm the 3 seed. At best, I'm probably the 2 seed. What's the difference between the 2 and the 3 seed? Like, the odds of you, you know, not having to play the Niners after you've watched how they've pretty much dominated the NFC is slim to none. So, you know, if it comes back to bite them in the butt and they end up having to go back to Dallas to have to win, the Lions have won some road games in tough environments. I think they're built for it. At the end of the day, the way they play, they want to win the game. And they want to win it on their terms. Going into overtime and hoping you win the coin toss and that your defense can stop CeeDee Lamb because he was killing them. I think that was the right call. You know, if I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose with the best unit that I have. And in that case, Sunday, I think the best unit that – or Saturday, the best unit that the Lions had were their offense. And I think that's the mentality that needs to change in the NFL too. Like, the idea that you just play for overtime – now, in the playoffs or something like that, that's different. But, like, regular season, some of these teams, you got to think about that. The Bills, I always go back to the Bills. Bro, your offense has always been your best unit. And you're asking them to stop the Chiefs from getting in the field goal range, and you didn't squib kick it either? Like, I don't know what you expected. And that was, the game that ushered in the rule change about overtime. But, your best unit in that particular game is your offense. Now, as they're built right now, depending on who they're playing, their best unit might be their defense. So you can't afford to look into going into overtime. But I just wouldn't leave it up to overtime, man. I'd rather lose with my offense on the field. And so I didn't have a problem with what Matt did. Or Dan. Gosh, I'm switching between college and NFL. Anyway, we are at the 40-minute mark. I think that is a great time to kind of wind it down. Thank you guys for listening if you made it this far. If not, thank you for at least clicking on the link. But feel free to reach out to me and let me know, what you think. If you want to potentially get on and, chop it up with me in the mornings, we could work something out. We could pre-record. It's whatever, man. So Friday, I'll have more of a breakdown on the NFL playoff picture. We can do some scenarios because those are always fun. And then we can also look ahead to the national championship. So I will catch you guys Friday. I keep saying next week. I will catch you guys Friday. Take care.